you guys can still write your own laws. You can write the principles, the constitution and all that. And all we do is ensure there is an impartial and coherent reading of that law and produce rulings that are consistent with that. Yeah, so if anything, I think it just enhances the constitution that you guys are going to write for the products that you're going to be setting up.
I have 100 more questions I'd like to ask, but I can only ask one. And the question, and I think this is a question I've had for years. I'm really glad I get to ask you. Kleros, but the token is called PNK. Why? What does PNK stand for?
Welcome back, everyone, to the CDAO Pod. I'm your host, MemeBrains, and co-hosting with me today is one of the most engaged CDAO citizens, David. Welcome to the show. It's great to have you here, man. How are you doing tonight?
Great. Thanks very much for having me. Always good to see you.
It's pretty cool to not be alone as the host on the show. This is actually the first time that I've had a co-host. I'm pretty stoked. It's refreshing, actually, to have another brain, another voice. Usually, if I like fumble my words or have like a brain blank completely, I just have to like keep rolling and hope no one notices. Now I can just pass the buck on to you. No pressure. Everyone's listening. It'll be great. David's currently helping a lot with CDAO governance discussions and with the likely upcoming structure changes in our DAO that everyone will be voting on. If you want to learn more about all that stuff, definitely check out our community calls, 4 p.m. every Wednesday Mountain Time. We just wrapped one up, a really good one, about an hour ago. It went well. If you want to learn more about David, I suggest you just check out episode 11, where him and I do a full-on one-hour one-on-one discussion together about his background and about what was going on in the DAO at that time. Now, as you all know, David has a background in law, so it seems very natural that he's the one that suggested I check out Kleros, and I'm very glad I did. Kleros, the Justice Protocol. Now, Kleros is a crowdsourced, blockchain-based, game theory-incentivized dispute resolution platform. To date, they've resolved over 1,200 disputes and paid out over 300 Ethereum to their over 700 jurors. Now, we have Guanghyam here today from the core team at Kleros. I'm really excited to dive in and unpack all of this in a short 1 hour. Guanghyam, how are you doing today, man? And where are you calling from?
Yeah, doing great. Thank you for having me. I'm in Singapore right now. It's 8 a.m. over here. Rather early for me, mostly working with the teams in Latin America and Europe. So yeah.
Should I be thanking you or should you be thanking me?
I should be thanking you. Very happy to be here today.
Yeah, I know. I'm glad you could be here. In crypto, I find I just keep getting up later and later and later. And there's a certain point where it's like, should I even go back to bed or just keep on going? And especially with all these time zones. So I appreciate it. And maybe if we start off, did I say anything wrong about my description of Kleros? Would you say that that was a correct intro or do you want to add anything to that?
No, you did a fantastic intro. And I think that, you know, Kleros has always been known as the justice protocol, and our court system is the most common way that people know about us. But maybe I can add just by saying that, you know, Kleros, you know, we are a court system, but a court system is actually a subset of a broader category of systems called subjective oracles. The system that we've designed is meant to take in very subjective information, digest it, and give back answers to those questions to allow you to power a whole variety of different use cases. So dispute resolution is just one of the, I think, 30 different ways you can use Kleros. You can also use Kleros as identity verification, data curation, social recovery, and all those things don't technically fall under the classical definition of what you call a dispute, but they are subjective oracle use cases as well, and they are also powered by Kleros right now.
Gotcha. And David, feel free to jump in anytime you like. In your own words, to someone who's maybe never heard of Kleros before, Guanghyam, how would you describe, like, how does it work? If we go from beginning to end, how does it work and what does it do exactly?
So I think you gave a very good introduction, you know, talking about Kleros as a crowdsourced justice protocol that is basically running based on game theoretical systems. So Kleros, we see ourselves as game designers. We basically designed a chessboard, a coordination game of sorts that basically takes in jurors from the community, and they do not need any kind of centralized coordination. They basically come into the court, stake, and we basically set up the game for them to coordinate on what the answer to a very subjective question is. And Kleros is initially designed to basically replace the role of judges, arbitrators, or any kind of centralized mediators, because that is not something that you can accept in a fully decentralized economy, right? Now, if you have a marketplace or escrow or insurance payout that you need to get paid out, you cannot afford to have $1 million payout be obstructed by someone who has been corrupted, bribed, or has different intentions than you have. So yeah, that is why we developed Kleros, and Kleros basically replaces the central person with this coordination game powered by people from the internet. So that is basically what Kleros is at the core, and we use that to answer different kinds of questions. And people, you can interface with us through, let's say, a DAO, or you could build an insurance protocol. that outsources that question to us. You can also build identity protocol that uses Claros to check whether a human is real or not, or whether a certain piece of credential is justified to be assigned to a certain person or not. So yeah, that is basically it. Are there specific use cases that CDDAO has been thinking of that perhaps I can dive more into?
When using Claros, would an organization need to first decide in advance proactively that Claros is going to be set up as a backup if there is arbitration required? Or could I go to Claros with an existing issue that we're trying to get resolved retroactively, so to say?
Yeah, that's a very good question. So Claros, when we do business development or integrations, we are not so much selling a certain product. We are more selling a service and actually selling a jurisdiction, right? We are actually getting people to adopt the jurisdiction of Claros so that if and when a dispute happens, you can use us as a dispute resolution mechanism. If you plan on having a fully trustless integration, fully trustless process where if and when a dispute happens, you don't want any malicious parties to be able to interfere with a just outcome. Yes, you do need to ensure that the recognition and the integration has been done beforehand. Yeah, otherwise, you know, the smart contracts and all the things cannot really act in a fully trustless way. But there are many instances where people have already had a dispute and they come to Claros for some kind of mediation or dispute resolution. And that is possible as long as both parties agree to use the jurisdiction of Claros for that dispute resolution process. Claros is often the first step in a multi-step arbitration process or dispute resolution process. You will use Claros as perhaps you know you don't agree and it is too expensive to go to the courts. So Claros becomes a very interesting alternative. And actually, we have had even real-world disputes coming to Claros for arbitration in the past. 2 years ago, we had one case in Mexico. There was a dispute between a landlord and a tenant, and Claros was used as a way to replace traditional courts for dispute resolution. And after that, once the ruling has been done, whoever has the power to carry out the sentence or the arbitral awards, yeah, we'll basically take the ruling and force that wherever applicable. So Claros, just to zoom out a little bit, Claros, we see ourselves as the judiciary system of DAOs, of organizations. Just like in the United States or other established democracies around the world, you have this concept of separation of powers. You have the people who write the laws, the legislative branch. You have the people who interpret and make judgments, whether the judiciary, and you have the executive, right, which carries out executive functions. So Claros, we see ourselves strictly as a judiciary, performing judiciary functions for all kinds of organizations, meaning we are meant to just take in information and produce a ruling on it, but the execution of the ruling or the sentence or whatever you call it is out of scope, and it is actually not intended that we take care of that. Yeah, so Claros, we work with all kinds of people to basically be the judiciary. We provide information, and the executive branch can be perhaps a smart contract. It could be perhaps a multi-sig. It could be a railroad, a court system, or arbitrator, or anything that you can imagine. You know, so that's basically how we function when we work with partners.
Can I jump in with a couple questions?
Yes.
So first of all, I love Claros. I got into the whole Web3 space in around 2017, 2018, and Claros was one of the projects that engaged me right from the beginning. I was always very excited about it. I love that you talk about it as a jurisdiction. I think that is a fantastic way to describe it, opting into a jurisdiction. And it's interesting that you also use the word game in it. So I have a legal background, and I've taught law for a long time. I don't practice. And I'm also very interested in governance. I'm currently getting a PhD in sociology of the metaverse and DAOs. And so this is a space that I love. And as someone who has a background in law, I find this incredibly critical. Right now, having worked with CityDAO for quite a while, you had asked earlier, do we have some specific things, certain kinds of disputes? And yeah, we do. And so in terms of one of the governance proposals that I and others have suggested was to use Claros, but a couple of questions. So one question is, it sounds like, and please correct me if I'm wrong, that a jury pool is selected at random, sort of a randomocracy, right, from this jury pool. So that would eliminate the sort of idea of voir dire in law, where the lawyers would choose a jury. And of course, they're competing. They're trying to choose a jury that's sympathetic to their case, and they're trying to exclude jurors who are openly hostile to their case. So there's no more voir dire, it's random. The other question, I think a preliminary issue that's really important is, you'd mentioned the judiciary and this idea of the separation of powers. The jury does make the final determination, but they get jury instructions from a judge who's trained in the law. So they're not just listening to both sides and making an evaluative judgment, they're instructed in the law by the judge and then following the very specific rules of any sort of court case. So if we're talking about a case that was disputed, oh, whether it's a money case about somebody promised money to somebody else, like they had a contract, or whether this is a case where someone said something offensive to another person and they're trying to deal with who was right and who was wrong, these in the traditional judiciary would be different court cases with different instructions. And I'm curious how Kleros handles that issue of not just making it an opinion among a bunch of sort of random people.
Yeah, sure thing. So let me talk about the random selection first. You know, Kleros, we are indeed randomly selecting the jurors. But before we randomly select, they are self-selected into the categories or the topics that they are supposedly best at. Yeah, so while the court is fully permissionless and trustless, we do have more than 20 different courts on the Ethereum blockchain right now, and it's constantly increasing as we get more use cases and people proposing new courts. Each of these 20 courts have a different set of parameters, yeah, and each of them is actually a shelling point in itself. For those who are not familiar with the idea of shelling points, so it's a concept invented by this American game theorist. And the idea of a shelling point is that, you know, when you give a lot of uncoordinated people the same question and you give them a set of incentives and rules, the most common answer that they agree on is what you call the shelling point. Yeah. So that's basically the coordination point, the most logical point where you will find the most people. But each of these courts that we have on the Ethereum blockchain is a shelling point in itself. We aggregate people basically by putting out a set of rules saying, hey, these are the knowledge requirements that you need. If you vote coherently, this is the reward that you get. If you vote incoherently, this is the penalty that you will be slashed with. And that creates a set of incentives for the people with the right knowledge to come into the court. Yeah. So if you have, let's say we have a court for example, blockchain technical disputes, and you are not a smart contract developer yourself, it would be almost foolish for you to stake in the court because over the long run, over the course of many disputes, or perhaps even within the course of one dispute, you will already stand to lose quite a significant amount of money. So it becomes illogical and economically unfeasible for you to stake in the court. Yeah. So with this mechanism as the backdrop, we have basically created a system where if you escalate a dispute into a certain court, you will have very likely have people who at least know what the court requires them to know. Or during the course of the dispute, they will be very economically incentivized to go and find the right answer to that dispute. Yeah. So when we do random selection, we select within these pools of people. And after they are selected, they are basically governed by the crypto economic system that the court has mandated. And they have a very strong incentive to vote coherently in the first time and also to appeal any wrong decisions that may or may not come up in the course of the dispute.
Oh, sorry, just to clarify. So the pool is not really random. It's a pool of experts, and the way that we know they're experts is they are incentivized to only stake in a court where they would know something about the subject matter.
That is correct. Yeah. One of the most frequently asked questions that we get is, I have a dispute. Can I choose who comes into my dispute, right? Who comes into the jury for my dispute? And sometimes that question comes from a place of simply wanting to keep it as an inner circle thing, like, hey, this is my DAO, my dispute. I just want to use your game, but my people, right? And sometimes it comes from a place of, okay, do the people that you choose have the right knowledge to rule on my cases? And our answer to both of those questions is, I don't think those are necessary concerns, because if you write the right set of incentives and the right rule set, the right people will come into the court by themselves. Yeah. Let's say the CityDAO, you have a certain project which has a certain set of, you say, hey, we're going to create a new jurisdiction. This is the rule set, the constitution, and the principles of how this project functions. And you create a court that says, if you stake in this court, you need to be very well versed in this body of law, right? Then it becomes almost illogical for someone who is not familiar with that to stake in the court. Because if and when they get chosen for a dispute, they will need to go and read up and educate themselves on the body of law anyway. So the answer to both of those questions is, don't worry, the system will take care of it by themselves. Perhaps you can ask your question first, because I'm going to dive into the part about how do we guide the jury towards the right answer within the dispute.
Okay, cool. And then in that case, so there's two things in my mind. One is, you said there's 20 different courts. And I think that that means there'll be like a court specifically focused on, I don't know, something technical. Another court would be focused on something argumentative. There's some sort of weird argument and people are calling each other names. There might be a court for that. Can you give me a sample of some of the courts?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, so we have the most widely used courts is the blockchain courts. And we have a blockchain court for, just to zoom out again, our court is a court with a hierarchy. Yeah, so we at the top, we have the Supreme Court of Kleros, so to say, the general court. And every other court is basically a sub-court of that court or a sub-court of that court. The idea is that we want to pool as many jurors as possible in the same pool. But if it is very clear that a certain question or this belongs to a subcategory and you want to start with the most specialized people first, you should be able to do that. So we will basically, we have, for example, the general court. And after that, below that, you have the translation court, you have the humanity court, you have the blockchain court. And within the blockchain court, you have two more sub-courts, for example, saying, hey, blockchain non-technical disputes and blockchain technical disputes. Well, for the translation court, you can have translation courts for each of the translation pairs, like English, German, German, Japanese, Japanese, English, English, Chinese. And yeah, for translation, that is a very different use case from what we talked about just now about technical disputes, because all of those courts are not necessarily higher or lower than each other. The skill set required is similar, it's just different languages and different combinations of them.
And so if a community had a bounty to draw an elephant for their NFT, and I accepted that bounty and I did the work and I drew a potato instead of an elephant, and then I'm looking to get my money, the community would say no. And then if it escalated and it went to a jury, what court would that be?
If we're talking about recognizing the image of an elephant versus a cat or a dog or something else, that can go to the general court of clerics. Yeah, anybody with a pair of eyes and common sense can answer that question. So yeah, that's the general court.
And then the second one, and I was just about to ask about the dynamics of the game theory and the PNK token and how that works. The way I understand it, let's say that I want to be a juror, then I would need to have some PNK that I suppose I would buy from the open market. And then I would identify what my expertise is and put myself up for being a juror. Then I would get selected and then I would look at the evidence on both sides. And then I would have to make a determination. Who do I think is right? And the game theory aspect, I think, if I understand correctly, comes in where if I select option A and most jurors select option A, then we would all get paid a portion of whatever the two disputing parties set up as the ante, for lack of a better word. So if I vote correct, I'm going to get paid. If I'm the contrarian and I'm the one out of 10 jurors that voted option B, then I would actually get deducted a fee from whatever it is that I staked in PNK to Kleros because I was wrong, basically. And that's the incentive to try my best anyways, maybe not always correct, but try my best to answer correctly and honestly and do the research on it. Did I get that right? Or maybe you can fill in some holes there that maybe I jumped over.
Yeah, sure. I'm very glad you asked this question because this leads very logically into the second part of the explanation I wanted to dive into. So you mentioned the word correct, and that is a word that we don't use very lightly within the Court of Kleros or within the Project of Kleros, because correct is something that is very hard to define in a decentralized way, but we can define what is coherent. And a lot of the work that we do at Kleros is to make sure that what you see as coherent in a court case is what a trained expert or someone with empathy, a sense of justice and fairness would see as also the correct answer. And one of the core things that we're trying to do is to make the shelling point of every case. Yeah, so that is basically the logical answer that someone who is fair, not malicious, has the right knowledge. We hope to make the correct answer coincide with the coherent answer in that round. Yeah, so when you create a court case, let's say there, for each court, we will determine a set of coherence rewards and incoherence penalties. You will need to stake and that stake gets locked. And if you vote correct, coherently, yeah, meaning you choose together with the majority of the jury, you will get basically a portion of the rewards that were paid into the court. So the question is, what if the 10 people were chosen, 9 of them vote yes, 1 of them votes no, but the no person is actually the correct one, right? So that is where the most important feature of our court comes into play. Yeah, there are two of them. One is the ability to present evidence in the court, and the second is the appeal system of Kleros. So Kleros, just now, I used the word jurisdiction to describe Kleros. I think that is not entirely accurate because we basically create a chessboard for the game, right, or the scaffold for jurisdictions to operate in. We do not write the laws. We just take in the laws, produce a ruling, and give it to someone else to execute, right? So for example, let's say within a DAO, a project, or a real-world jurisdiction, you have many bodies of laws. That's all okay. We do have some general guidelines on morality and ethics. Like, you know, we are never going to rule on things like revenge porn, trafficking, assassination markets. Those are out of bounds for Kleros. So it doesn't matter where or how or what's the nature of the disputes. We will never rule on those things. Yeah, we will just say, hey, we refuse to arbitrate on these cases. But if it doesn't fall into one of those exemptions, right, then we will basically take in whatever laws that you wrote. And those can be very simple, from 3 lines to a 10-page, 20-page body of law. And you pass it to us and we'll interpret it. So the jury do not start from a blank slate. Yeah, it's not tabula rasa for them. They will actually, when the case is started, even before the competing parties present evidence in the court, they will already be presented with what we call the meta evidence or the primary document from basically the party that escalated the dispute to them. Yeah, and that sets out the rules of the game. And that piece of document, as I mentioned, can be a three-line rule set or a multi-page thing, but it really sets the stage. Yeah? It helps to shape and ensure that the shelling point of the coordination game is predictable. So you want it to be predictable, you want it to be replicable as well, so that if and when there are people randomly voting in a certain case, you can use that body of law and say, hey, you guys are not voting according to it. And we wanted to go back to where this predicts where the shelling point is, yeah, or what the correct answer is. So if you see that, so coming back to incorrect rulings, if you see 10 people voting, 9 of them vote yes, 1 votes no, and you think that the answer should actually be no, what you can do is you can appeal the case. You can just step in. Anybody on the internet who reads the meta evidence, the primary document, right, can say, hey, this sets the stage. And after the evidence was provided by the two parties, after you read everything, you think that, hey, no should be the correct answer. You actually can appeal, and there is actually a strong incentive for you to appeal as well. Because each court case, after it has resolved in a certain round, it becomes a bounty for a period of time. Yeah, and I use that word because if during that period, after ruling has been made, we have an appeal period of anything between 5 days to 2 weeks. Yeah, and if you think it's incorrect, you step in, you appeal, and if you manage to successfully overturn the case in the subsequent round, you stand to win the stakes and the deposit that was put into the case up to that point. Yeah, so there is a lot of crypto economic incentives for people to step in, to police the court, to ensure justice, and try to rectify the shelling point for that case. If we start with 10 people, we'll make sure that in the next round, it becomes even more difficult to have a randomly voting jury or incorrect jury. And we do that by basically doubling the number of people in the court. You start with 10, we'll have 20 plus one, yeah, just to make sure that it's always an odd number to ensure there is no vote splitting. Yeah, and if 21 people do not get to a satisfactory answer, then we'll go to 43. 43 after that, we go to 87, and so on and so forth.
Is it the simple majority? If you have 10 people or 11 people, it would be 6 versus 5, and then it would win, and 6 people would get the incentive, and 5 would be slashed. It's not like a 2/3 majority or a 9 out of 10 or simple majority.
That's correct. Yeah.
Okay.
The simple majority will get the coherence reward, and the minority, the slashed stakes, will actually be redistributed to the coherent majority.
Now, can I ask a question? I really like the appeals idea that people are incentivized, anyone is incentivized to go through the cases, find some sort of injustice, and appeal it. I think that's a super cool game and a great incentive. If in the first instance, 6 people said yes, and they got the incentive, and 5 people got slashed, and then what if I found it, this case, and I want to appeal it? And on appeal, it turns out, so now you double the amount of people, and it turns out the 5 people who voted no, actually they were right. They already got slashed though, and their rewards got redistributed to the 6. What happens? Do the 6 have to disgorge their rewards to the 5?
Yeah, that's a great question. So the distribution of the rewards and the slashing only takes place after all the appeals have taken place. Yeah. So if you have 5 rounds, right, the final coherent answer in, let's say, round 5, when you have already involved, let's say, 300 people, that answer determines what the rest of the jury in all the prior rounds have been voting on. So you don't have to worry about provisional results and provisional slashing, because everything is only calculated at the end. Because of the appeal system, it becomes illogical for you to just randomly vote and hope that you get away with randomly voting. With the appeal system, in all the rounds, you're always going to be held accountable. Yeah? And you always have incentive to try to convince the rest of the jury that, hey, my reasoning is sound and this is why I'm voting this way. Even though on the blockchain, you can remain totally anonymous and we do not make juror justification a must, there is no easy way for us to say, hey, you must be voting after you have read the documents and evidence properly. Right? There is no way for us to know that. We can only look at the results and see if the result is consistent with good and logical thinking process. Yeah, and then we punish you according to that.
I actually want to jump in again, because you just said something about evidence. And you had mentioned this before. So during a regular trial, during this discovery period, both sides can request evidence from each other. So let's say, for example, that I bring a case to Kleros, and the case is that Meme Brains made a proposal for $10,000 to our DAO. And I went publicly all over the DAO and I said bad things about him. I said he's a cheater and he's a liar and he's not going to do it. Now, what happens is he ends up not winning the proposal. Now, his argument is he didn't win the proposal because of my behavior. And so we come to Kleros. Now, at the beginning, we might have some clear evidence. MemeBrains would have his proposal. And I could say, well, it's not clear, but everybody on the jury can read it. And maybe MemeBrains took a bunch of screenshots of all the negative things I said about him. And again, that's clear. Everybody can read it. So they start with that. They have that. What if we want to bring in witnesses? If I want to bring in somebody who I say is a character witness, they heard MemeBrains say whatever, or MemeBrains wants to bring in somebody who says, David said he's just trying to attack me. Actually, he likes my proposal, but he doesn't like me. And can we bring in different kinds of evidence? Can I request evidence from him or him from me?
Yes, absolutely. So we use the word evidence very loosely in the Kleros court. Yeah. So evidence basically means any kind of document, argument, text, video, sound, images, memes that can potentially shape the selling point of that case. It's basically any file that fits onto IPFS. If you can put it there, we will accept it as evidence, as long as the jury is able to open the file as well. Of course, if you use, let's say, a Photoshop file and not everybody has Photoshop, okay, that might not be opened or viewed by as many jury members as you wish, but technically any file can be presented. And you can't say like, hey, I want you to present this, or I command that you disclose this, because there is no way to enforce that in the blockchain environment, right? But we can say, hey, if you do not disclose that, then basically you are not going to be able to convince the jury yourself. Yeah? We can say, hey, I presented evidence of you saying crazy things on the internet, then you must, and I perhaps showed the video that was cut off at the 30th second. It becomes important for you to the opposing party to try to present perhaps the second half of that video to try to absolve yourself of the accusation.
Oh, so I would have a chance to respond to the accusation? Two parties would be able to respond to each other? There's more than one evidence submission process?
Yeah, so anybody can submit any kind of evidence they want, but there is a distinct phase within each case where we ask for the evidence. Yeah, so each court case has three phases. You have the evidence phase, you have the voting phase, and then you have the appeal phase. Because we are getting a jury to coordinate on an answer, they also have skin in the game. They need to know that if and when they vote, they are voting according to the information that the rest of the jury has as well. Yeah. So let's say we give them a 5-day voting period. On the first day, someone is like, okay, I'm going to be a good juror. I'm going to vote the moment I can vote. So voting starts at 0000 UTC. Half an hour later, he or she votes. She spends half an hour reading on evidence and then she votes. And then 1 hour later, someone uploads the second half of the video and changes the entire game, right? So it becomes unfair for the jury if we continuously allow new evidence to be considered in the court. So the evidence phase is meant to gather the evidence only up until that point. Yeah. So beyond that, new evidence cannot be considered by the jury during the voting period to ensure that it's fair to everyone.
That's great. And you just mentioned anyone can submit evidence, right? So if this was the case between MemeBrains and I, other people could also submit videos or screenshots or whatever to support one of us?
You can. Yes, you can. So just now I mentioned that, you know, the medium of the evidence can be anything. It can be video, image, whatever. But it can also be the content itself can be of any nature. It could be an argument. An argument is not necessarily considered as evidence in the traditional sense, but it can be someone who has looked at the 5 images that were placed in the evidence in the court beforehand and come to a certain conclusion after they have run it through certain software and say, hey, this is the analysis and this should be how you should be voting. That is also considered evidence and arguments in the court. So that's very important too.
In the cases that you've had, do you find that there's usually like an overwhelming amount of evidence, or is it usually pretty clear what the shelling point is?
Yeah, so we spam evidence is something that we thought would be a big problem, but it turned out to be not such a big problem due to two reasons. I think first of all, unless you have an incentive to post evidence, normally you wouldn't be bothered to go to a random message board or forum and post stuff there to try to mess with what's happening there, right? So that's one. And then second of all, evidence submission is on-chain, so you do need to pay gas fees and a significant amount of that, especially on the Ethereum mainnet, to post evidence. So that's kind of like a spam protection that we have right now. Perhaps in the future, as Kleros move to cheaper chains, we will have more of those spam problems. But right now, it's not really a huge problem.
Right. I wasn't thinking of people spamming evidence. I was just thinking of the two parties, whether the evidence ever got overwhelming for the jurors. I mean, I guess you're saying it's been pretty reasonable so far.
Yeah, so evidence has gotten out of hand sometimes because the arguments, I guess, are so heated and you can't really delete things from chain, right? So it just builds up and builds up. And at the end of the day, you might have like 200 pages of text and nobody's going to read that. Nobody's going to read everything and be able to keep all of that in their minds. So that is when I think people who are voting the case or people who have skin in the game becomes incentivized to start publishing summaries of what has happened so far. While there is incentive to present evidence, there is also incentive to present condensed, convincing versions or collections of the evidence that has been presented so far. And we don't really necessarily prescribe a certain way of doing that. We try not to. So it is a choice. You know, they can talk to each other. They can go online to Telegram, to Discord and try to find each other. But by default, we hope everyone has a choice to stay anonymous unless they choose to disclose their identity to other jurors. Because you can be, if someone knows who you are, you could potentially be bribed. That's not necessarily a bad thing for the juror, but you can be coerced, you can be blackmailed, and that's not something that you want.
And how did you get involved with Clairos? I'm curious about your story.
Yeah, so I've actually joined Clairos just about a year ago. And before that, I've been a silent observer of the crypto industry for about 6-7 years. Just to zoom out even more, I'm Singaporean. I was born in Singapore, but I actually lived in the Netherlands for 11 years. I went there to study, lived in Delft, lived in Utrecht and Amsterdam. For the most part of that time, I was working in the financial tech industry. And during the time, of course, I got into contact with cryptocurrencies, payment systems and all that. But those were early days, like 2015, 2016. But the whole promise of being able to revolutionize how we organize ourselves as societies and governments was very fascinating to me. And in the past 2 years, it started to become clear that, hey, I think the technology and the ways of rearranging these technologies into ways that can really change how we organize ourselves as a society is becoming a reality. And that is when I decided, I think this is the right time for me to step into this space. And very quickly, Clairos became the only project that I wanted to be part of. Then, yeah, 1 year later, here I am.
And you were drawn to Clairos for some reason. Did you maybe study law or did you have an interest in law before Clairos? How did that sort of evolve?
Yeah, my background is a bit of everything. So my first academic training was in aerospace engineering. And after that, I studied law at the master's level. And I've always been working in the financial technology space, which is always at the intersection of law and technology, right? Always talking about, who should be able to be custodians of money, who should be licensed and all that. Yeah, I find all that very fascinating. And the political philosophy is such a fascinating topic for me, talking about not just about the what is being written, but why we are organizing society in a certain way. Why are there so many different ways of organizing people and why do they work in the specific context that they are in? So that has always fascinated me and I always wanted to combine those things into my daily work. Yeah, so I think Clairos is one of those very rare projects that combines all those elements, a bit of philosophy, a bit of law, a bit of game theory, a bit of mathematics, a bit of computer science, all into a single project. And if you join our weekly team calls, it's really all of that in the call. We are always debating, hey, this game theoretical system, does it really achieve the end that we are trying to achieve? It might work, but does it conflict with this principle that we're trying to go for? And is the implementation feasible? I just love being at the intersection of this.
So one of the things that I really, as a trained lawyer, a licensed lawyer, what I love is that you have no lawyers. That's fantastic. Are you concerned, though, that if Clairos really expands, people would come in and say, oh, Meme Brains, you have a case you want to bring. Let me be your Clairos lawyer.
Yeah, so lawyers can be involved in Clairos in two ways. Yeah, so we do have two lawyers and a core Clairos cooperative. I would say that the majority of the team, we start out as a game theory project, right? A very technical game theoretical project. And law was just one use case of the subjective oracle solution that was developed, like law-related use cases. So that is why, indeed, as you have already observed, we don't say you need to have a law degree to be involved in Clairos, either as a cooperative member or as a juror. I think there is a very good reason why law is as complicated as it is in the real world. There is so much law, so many different ways of approaching the topic, and it requires a lot of skill to tackle that. And as we approach more and more complicated cases, as the body of past precedents become more and more sizable, we are actually now facilitating community members to get in touch with other people or community members who have a lot of experience in either voting or writing evidence for cases. And we have seen that happen in the past, even without mediation. there are certain community members, perhaps they get reached out through blockchain chat. They are basically, you know, people messaging each other, also on Telegram, and say, hey, I think you wrote pretty good evidence for this particular case. Help me argue my case in this other Claro's case. And that's kind of like, you know, perhaps the beginning of a new kind of career, something like a crypto lawyer.
I know, that's amazing. I know so many people who are so good at arguing, they just don't have the credential to technically be a lawyer. But I love that it opens up some really interesting new jobs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. And there are also many things that lawyers cannot do in the real world. Like, for example, if you're going to be ruling on a very technical dispute, lawyers also depend on technical experts to step in to give a yes or no answer to a specific part of the case, right? And that becomes then the basis for further rulings of the situation. So Claro's can be used both as a tool for expert opinion, like, hey, Claro's court, tell us, did this hack really happen due to a wallet exploit, for example? And if Claro says yes, then you use that for further things down the line, right? Or it can also be a mediation tool. It is too expensive to go to the court, but it is feasible to go to the court of Claro's. Then you can say, hey, let me just put it to this pool of technically untrained, but not necessarily untrained people, right, and see what they say first. If they say with a clear majority that, hey, yes, you are guilty, then you know that probably if you go to a real world court, you will probably lose as well. And then it becomes clear that you should just settle and stop it there.
If I could just throw one more question, I'm sorry to monopolize, but I find it fascinating. You just mentioned if it's feasible to go to Claro's. I mean, one of the things about law that we all know is just how expensive it is to sue someone. It's crazy. What kind of costs are involved with using Claro's for civil disputes?
Yeah, so Claro's, the cost of using Claro's is a direct function of the juror coherence rewards. So if you are going to a, let's say, the blockchain technical court, and if you stake in the court, we promise to pay you, let's say, $50 per dispute. The cost of arbitration is simply that coherence reward per juror multiplied by the number of jurors that are involved in the case. So if you have five jurors, $50, $250 for the case. Claro's as a cooperative and a project does not take a cut of the case fees. And we really build this project as a public good.
But if there are appeals, many, many appeals, and the number of jurors keeps doubling, would the parties need to double down on the money they're putting into sort of escrow?
Yeah, so people who are appealing are the ones that are paying the additional fees. You don't necessarily need to be one of the disputants to be appealing. I mean, anyone, and if you do win, right, as the appealant, whoever, you know, the two parties in the beginning, it depends on whether they have staked something in the beginning, right? Sometimes disputes are started with no escrow to stake in the background, but if there is, then normally that becomes part of the equation as well for whoever wins the dispute.
Yeah, well, one thing that comes to mind, and I hear that, is to David's point, I mean, the traditional court system IRL is so incredibly expensive that $50, it's almost a laughable expense. So there could be a scenario here where, let's say in real life, if I would be anticipating a $100,000 experience over 4 years on some silly lawsuit, then if you take $100,000 and divide it by $50, that's a lot of potential appeals. Some person could do 100 appeals and still pull out ahead than what they would be in the real world, which is great in terms of saving money. But does it perhaps overcomplicate a case, for example? I don't know if that's ever happened or not. I'm just sort of theorizing in my mind what might happen.
Are you referring to the fact that you can involve so many jurors that you can overcomplicate a case? Is that a question?
Well, so let's say that I appealed some case and there was 11 jurors and it was $50 per juror. I think that means that me, as the person appealing, I'd have to pay $550 into the Claro's pot for the cohesion pot that would ultimately go to the jurors. Is that right?
Mm-hmm. That's correct. To start with, yeah.
Yeah, because if it's $550, I mean, that's a lot to some people. But in comparison to traditional courts, that's less than an hour with my lawyer. So it's relatively easy for someone potentially to just keep appealing something over and over and over and trying to massage it in whichever way they're trying to go. And I'm not sure if that's ever happened.
But if I'm understanding, there's no point in doing that, right? If you keep appealing, unless you think you're really going to win, that you just keep losing money.
Yes, that's correct. Yeah. So Claro's court, you know, the reason why we double the number of people involved in every case is because we want the coherence fees, the amount of money that you have to deposit into the court, to increase exponentially as the case increases in complexity and duration. It should become very quickly economically unfeasible for anyone who tries to overpower the court simply by griefing or trying to bribe and appealing or any of those combinations.
What if I, as someone who does know some law, what if I happen to know that the jury in some case was wrong? Technically, following American law in this jurisdiction, I happen to know that they're wrong. But nobody's really going to realize that. That happens sometimes in the law. The shelling point, everybody would think, oh, person A should win. But in the real law, it's person B who would win. And if I happen to know that and I appeal, the shelling point would never be person B. The shelling point would always be person A, but legally that's wrong. So shelling point that would always win.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, great point. So if you are appealing, you should always, I would say almost always, unless it's very, very blatant to everyone that the choice was just wrong, you should always appeal and upload additional evidence arguing for why the appeal was done. Yeah, this is to ensure that, hey, you are not just giving it another chance, you're also trying to shape the shelling point. You're trying to tell people that this is actually incorrect. And of course, you know, if you, before you do that, you should absolutely read the body of law that was submitted to the case very carefully, because you might be an American lawyer, but perhaps the dispute doesn't take that into account, or perhaps it's talking about Japanese law, or perhaps it's talking about international arbitration, then all those rules become very different. Yeah, so, but if you're very clear, upload evidence, shape the shelling point.
Yeah, so if I knew that something was legal in a certain way and people didn't realize, I could just upload that as evidence and hope that it would change everybody's mind to know this is the logic behind why person B should really win.
Yes, that's basically how the game is played.
This is fascinating to me because CityDAO is envisioning what a decentralized city of the future looks like, which ultimately envisions theoretically what would a decentralized world look like. And one of the big questions that pops up a lot is, well, what is the government structure? And in CityDAO, we're talking a lot about the functional applications like operations and legalities and accounting, that type of governance of the community. But then there's a government in and of itself has a fundamental role in providing a court system to resolve disputes. And I never really understood what that would look like in a decentralized future. And the more that I talk with you and research about Kleros, it starts to give potentials of, well, that could be the way that it goes. Maybe this is the way, or a similar version, or Kleros evolves to become a mechanism for a decentralized city of the future, such as what CityDAO or other network state ventures are building. Maybe this is how that future looks like and works.
Yeah, we think so as well. And I think that using Kleros does not in any way take away the autonomy or self-determination of your community. You guys can still write your own laws. You can write the principles, the constitution and all that. And all we do is to ensure there is an impartial and a coherent reading of that law and produce rulings that are consistent with that. Yeah, so if anything, I think it just enhances the constitution that you guys are going to write for the projects that you're going to be setting up.
Really cool. And just a couple minor wrap-up things here as we wrap up the call. If someone is listening to this and they want to be a juror, what do they do? Where do they go? What's their first step?
Yeah, very simple. You buy some PNK tokens and you can buy that on KuCoin or any of the decentralized exchanges like Uniswap. Buy PNK, go to court.kleros.io and choose one of the courts that you want to stake it. And then you will stand a chance to be drawn as a jury if a dispute comes to the courts. Yeah, I'm just saying that you don't necessarily have to buy PNK to be involved in Kleros. You can also be someone who appeals or someone who submits evidence. And all that does not require the PNK token. You don't need PNK tokens to create disputes in Kleros as well. Only the jurors who are being drawn into the voting system needs to buy and stake. Yeah.
Cool. And if I'm in a community and I want to start using Kleros, I just go to the website and get started, right?
If you want to use Kleros, yes. You will need to communicate to your community that, hey, you will have intention to use Kleros. And that is what we call an attestation. There are two ways to use Kleros. You can use it in a fully integrated way, or you can use it in what we call recognition of jurisdiction integration, which is just a fancy word for saying, hey, if and when there is a dispute, you will create an ad hoc arbitration. We use Kleros as the court for resolving those disputes, and you promise to recognize the ruling coming from the courts. So that is often the first way that many DAOs or projects start with us. They simply pledge to use Kleros, you know, they communicate that to their community, and then they go from there. If you are using, let's say, for example, Gnosis Safe to manage your DAO treasury or use it to perform executive functions within the DAO, we actually have a plugin that requires just a few clicks for you to set up Kleros as arbitrator for your DAO. And in the future, you can be sure that all the governance disputes, all the changes of parameters to your smart contracts will all be governed through an optimistic governance process by Kleros.
I think every community is trying to find a more efficient way to do everything, right? And dispute resolution is a topic that comes up, I think, everywhere, whether it's a traditional organization or even a group of friends sometimes, and definitely in a DAO, when there's the added complications of often never seeing someone in person face to face. So there's these assumptions that are made. You read something on a Discord, and then some person can make an assumption that, oh, they must have meant that. Or look at how arrogant this person is being, da da da. When really it wasn't intended that way, it can get misinterpreted. Sometimes it is intended that way, but sometimes it isn't. And so it makes it complicated when we're just dealing with text-based. I think my final little question for you, and I got to cut myself off here, but how do you make money? You said public good. This is a public good as the intention of Kleros. But you need funding, right? You get paid a salary, I'm sure, and somehow, some way, some shape or form, and other people in the core team. Is there a way that Kleros makes money through this process, or is it like a nonprofit and you get funding from benefactors?
Yeah. So at this moment, we are not technically a nonprofit, but we don't count on revenue from cases to sustain the ecosystem. Yeah. I think it is also perhaps, if we have that as a revenue stream, it will not be perhaps in the best interest of the community, because then we will want to increase the number of disputes in the market when actually, if anything, we should be used as a deterrent for having disputes even in the first place. So Kleros doesn't count on that. We are counting on the appreciation of the appreciation of our tokens for sustaining the project. And at this moment, our treasury is pretty healthy. We have a runway for a couple of years more, but there is no problem at all in that area. But in the long term, increasing the jurisdiction and the adoption of Kleros as a court of arbitration will naturally cause more people to join the court as a juror. Projects that, like yourself, that want to have a stake in the Kleros project will want to buy the token as well to have a say. And I think all of that will drive the upper momentum of the token, and that will sustain the project in the long term.
Gotcha. That makes a lot of sense.
I have 100 more questions I'd like to ask, but I can only ask one. And the question, and I think this is a question I've had for years. I'm really glad I get to ask you. Kleros, but the token is called PNK. Why? What does PNK stand for?
Yeah, I think it would be much more logical if it was like a KLR or something like that, something that rhymes with Kleros. PNK stands for Pinakion. Pinakion is actually a Greek word. So Kleros was actually inspired by the ancient Greek way of voting. So they basically have, in Athens, they have this thing called...
Oh, yes. I know what you're talking about. It's like a big stone thing.
Yes. Yeah. That big stone is called a Kleratorion. And it is actually a piece of stone. I think it's a Kleratorion. I will need to double check that. So yeah, people who are looking at this recording, please don't complain about my pronunciation of that word. So basically, it's a slab of stone with slots inside that stone for people to put in their Pinakion. So if you are a juror, let's say there is a court case happening, they will basically get 100 people to give each of these people a Pinakion. And they will have to put it into the Kleratorion. And the person who is initiating the court case will randomly draw a certain number of those lots out. And those people who get chosen will be taking part in a dispute. So that is basically inspiration for Kleros.
I'm so glad I asked that, because that is such a cool answer.
Well, thanks for your time. Yeah, I'm going to add to the show notes of this episode links to, obviously, the Kleros website, the Kleros Twitter. And I'm also going to put up a link to the Pinakion Wikipedia. If you liked and you're curious about what that was all about, I'll put the link to that on the show notes. Yeah, anyone, I encourage you all just to think about the dispute resolution process in your DAO. Think about it early, not late. Think about it proactively before something happens that becomes very difficult to resolve reactively. Proactively is always the way to go. And whatever it is you choose to do with dispute resolution in your DAO, just do it conscientiously. Give it some thought, right? It's like an insurance policy. We don't need it until we need it. And then when we need it, we really need it. So give some thought to that. If you have an idea for another guest, just reach out on the guest suggestion button on the podcast.cdao.io website. And remember to smash that subscribe button. Follow us on Twitter. Subscribe on Apple Podcasts, on Spotify. It's the best way to help out with the pod. It takes 5 seconds, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. And until then, make it a great week. We will see you next time on the next episode. Thanks again, Guangmin and David, for coming out. I appreciate it a lot. You guys are awesome.
Yeah, thanks so much. It's great to talk to you.
Yeah, thank you, Eric.
All right. We'll see you next time.
Bye.
Bye.